First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585. First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can go for all the latest. And I tell you, for you guys that are new to the show, call-in numbers are 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys in the listening queue, we always appreciate having you there. Just remember to hit that number one on your dial pad so we'll know you want to be heard on air. And for everybody that's out there, if you want to sign in, you can sign in using your Facebook account or anything else. And go ahead and live chat in the chat room if you want to. I tell you, we've always got something going on and some way to talk to us and get a hold of us. So feel free to do so if you'd like. I tell you, Ed Martin is usually here. I'm not sure where he's at right now. Just left a message with him on a text, so hopefully he'll join us very soon. In the meantime, we have a lot going on here in Kentucky. I tell you, I want to start real quick. Sports. It's the one thing we don't spend much time on. But, hey, it's NCAA season, right? And I tell you, Louisville and Kentucky, yes, UK and U of L, will face each other Friday night at 9:45 in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. I tell you, this, you know, everybody talks about Duke and North Carolina rivalries. I tell you, this Kentucky-Louisville rivalry, I will guarantee you, will stand against any other rivalry in the nation. It really will. Earlier this year, they played one game a year during the regular season, and earlier this year, Kentucky had beat Louisville earlier this year, so it's going to be interesting to see if Louisville bounces back in the tournament. And, you know, it was a hell of a tournament. Within the first 3 days, the Warren Buffett $1 billion challenge was gone. There was nobody left, and I thought that was pretty incredible. Ed Martin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, Mr. Spreason.
Man, I tell you, I've been watching
Warren Buffett Challenge. I'm feeling kind of bad because I actually have 100% on my brackets right now, and I just forgot to send mine in. So, damn it.
Yeah, I'm sure you did, man. I'm sure you did. I tell you, it's really interesting because of the Louisville-Kentucky angle. You know, Kentucky has struggled so much off and on all year. U of L has been consistent. Everybody was complaining about the seeding in this tournament when it came to U of L at number 4 and Kentucky at number 8. We even talked about it last week. And I told you and I told everybody else that I thought those seeds were fair. And I've got to tell you, I still believe that seeding was fair. And when you look at the parity over the weekend during the NCAA tournament, my God, I mean, you had all kinds of lower seeds teams winning games, and Kentucky, for some reason, with the exception of the one-point loss against Florida in a championship of the SEC tournament, Kentucky has actually looked pretty good. They played a number one seed undefeated Wichita State team yesterday and knocked them off. You know, what do you favor in the game, Louisville or Kentucky, and why?
Well, I tell you, on one hand, I'm more of a Louisville fan, so I wouldn't mind seeing the Cards win. You know, Kentucky wins, that's okay too, I guess. But right now, the thing I can't figure out is just is at least the opening odds. It had U of L at a 4.5-point favorite because, you know, if Louisville's on their game, that might be legit. But right now it doesn't, you know, and it could be the opponents Louisville had with St. Louis bogging things down and Manhattan, I think, being way underrated. I think, you know, if I'm looking at the games leading up to it right now, it has a look that Kentucky is the one with the mojo going right now. You know, if they play the same game that they played Wichita State and U of L doesn't play the best game of the year, then U of L's in trouble. But
well,
if U of L's hitting on all 8 cylinders, I think they can rattle Kentucky. But I don't get the spread they're talking about right now. I could see some Vegas odd maker throwing a half point one way or the other. Just, you know, you got to put a half point in there somewhere to break the tie. But beyond that, I'm sitting here looking at it. I wouldn't bet on this game at all unless somebody were throwing odds because you're looking at. You know, like I say, if Louisville comes out, it's really a coin toss. If they come out and they play their best ball, they can beat UK. If they're not, they could get the floor wiped with them. UK could wipe the floor with them. So I really don't know right now.
Well, I tell you, for me, I think it's actually a very interesting matchup. When you talk about Manhattan being underrated, I agree with you. But with Louisville, you got to understand, Rick Pitino coaches Louisville. Manhattan's coach was a Rick Pitino protege. So, you know, One of the things that I read last week was, you know, when Louisville faces Manhattan, they were going to be looking at a mirror image of themselves. And I totally agreed with that. And I tell you, that's exactly what we got.
The joke, my brother worked actually summed it up pretty good. He said, you know, I'm watching that game. He said, you know what I thought of? And I said, what? And he said, you know that scene in Patton, where he turns back Rommel's army and he stands up and says, Rommel, you magnificent bastard, I read your book. So Masiello, you know, he knew the Pitino game. And it's, you know, in a way, that's a big hat tip to Rick Pitino because Masiello coached one hell of a team.
Oh, I agree with you. And, you know, and I think really that game came down to conditioning. And that's one thing. I don't think there's a team in the country, not one team in the country, that would compare with the conditioning program that Rick Pitino has for his players. And, you know, I mean, even Russ Smith and those guys mentioned it after the game that, you know, about midway through the second half, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the star players like Jeff from Manhattan and a few others, they were gasping for air and asking for breathers. That's when they knew they had them because they had no gas left. They were running them to the ground. So, you know, that I think was a big difference in that game. But I tell you, in the U of L UK game, it's going to be interesting. I know why the point spread is 4.5 points. U of L has had a more consistent season. They had a better season than UK did. UK went from a number one rank to an unranked University of Kentucky before the NCAA tournament. So that all comes into play. I can see the 4.5-point favorite, but I tell you, if Kentucky can just keep it together and stay on the same page, you know, Louisville's going to have some major problems with their size. I see Kentucky winning this. I really do. And I know I tell everybody I'm a UK fan first, but I root for both teams. But in this particular case, if there was a matchup Louisville needed to be worried about, I think it was more Kentucky than Wichita State, but only because of the size. I think they could have matched up quite well with Wichita State, especially with their conditioning. But the size advantage Kentucky has may cause them some problems. But on the flip side of that, you know, after the first round game last Thursday night with Louisville, Russ Smith was hurt. And he played hurt, you know, again Saturday. And, you know, he had some bumps and bruises. He had a swollen left thumb on his non-shooting hand, but it's still a hand that he uses, you know, dribbling and everything else. And he had a bad ankle, I believe, too. So, you know, this gives him a whole week to get healthy, and who knows what we're going to see, but it's going to be a hell of a game Friday night. So I'm kind of looking forward to it, and I tell you.
Yeah. And as the joke goes around right now, it's a scalper's paradise because U of L and UK just down the road from Indianapolis, and, you know, big arena. So, yeah, they're going to pack it out. It's going to be a fantastically attended game. And you know, you want to see that because years ago when Pitino came to U of L and everybody decried it, I remember a couple people, in particular Terry Miners, were saying, you know, come on, people, lighten up. He said, we need, you know, both schools need to have superior coaches because, you know, we need to take this crown of where the epicenter of college basketball is. It was in North Carolina, you know, Duke.
Right.
North Carolina and Wake Forest and NC State. It was all down there. And he says, you know, we need to move it up. We need to get back in Kentucky and throw Bloomington in every once in a while.
Right.
Not this year, but every once in a while. it's good either way. The epicenter of college basketball is firmly in Kentucky. Although, you know, if I'm betting from here out, Arizona looks tough. So, I don't know.
You know, I went on record last week. I said Florida was not going to be in the final, and I said Arizona wasn't going to be there either. And I tell you, that might be one I choked back. I don't see Florida in the final. But Arizona, man, I tell you what, they impressed me a lot more than they had been. So who knows? That's possible. In the meantime, we do politics and news on this show. You know, for everybody listening, this is not normally a sports show, but we just can't help ourselves when we got Louisville and Kentucky facing each other right down the road in a Sweet 16 for an Elite Eight bid. However, along this day of news, Ed, great story. I love this. Coming out of WFPL and our good friend Philip Bailey over there. You know, we had this situation going on with David James where Michael Connor was saying that David James had to quit being a University of Louisville police officer or quit being a Metro Council member because he had conflicting oaths. Well, I have to apologize to our audience because I usually don't miss a trick, and I really don't. I'm very thorough. But the one thing I didn't think about when we were covering that story last week was the fact that there are other Metro Council members who have sworn oaths to something other than Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm talking about the attorneys, David Tandy,
yep.
David Yates, Brent Ackerson. Well, WFPL's Philip Bailey pointed this out today in a story, and he beat me to it because I just didn't think about it. But, you know, these guys are attorneys. They have to swear an oath to support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this Commonwealth. It doesn't specify anything about Louisville, but it's basically the same oath it's basically the same oath that David James took as a U of L police officer. Here's a situation. I don't think Tom Wine is going to have any choice. The Commonwealth attorney that Jack Conway slid it back to, I don't think he's going to have any choice but to say David James is legit. I don't see any way around it, because if you do that, then you're going to have to kick every attorney off, and you're going to have to go into court of law and start kicking people out of court. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at this, but what do you think about this story by Philip Bailey pointing out the obvious?
Well, I mean, yeah, I read the story, and Thomas McAdam posted it. That's where I saw it. But, you know, I look at it, and I first off, I say good on David James for fighting because it doesn't make a lot of difference. Secondly, you know, even though he's a Democrat, I got to compliment Brent Ackerson on this because he's actually, he seems to have stepped up to the forefront and, you know, as a practicing attorney and a Louisville city councilman, has stood up and said, you know, hey, look, here's a copy of our alderman, you know, our city council. And he said, and here's a copy of what I, you know, the pledge, the oath we have to take as lawyers. And here's a copy of the pledge that David James has to take. And even Brent Ackerson looked at it, you know, like I say, as a councilman, as an attorney, and said, they're pretty much identical. You know, a couple words here or there.
Right.
So, I mean, he's taking up the case now, which, you know, you want to see. And like I say, he basically said, hey, there's lots of oaths out there. And it was pointed out that Michael Connell has taken different oaths, you know, as
sure.
an attorney and so forth. So I just say good on David James. I mean, I just laugh for him fighting. It's especially when, you know, even as he said, it's politically motivated. If they back off, then, you know, it's always that catch 22. Now, if you back off, it's like, okay, well, you just got slapped. If you go to court, I've made some jokes about it. I think, well, I think you should go to court, and I think we should find out if this is, you know, if O'Connell's assertion holds water, because, my gosh, I mean, this could be great. We could think of it. No attorneys in government. You know, I mean, Bashir is gone. It means Abramson is gone. It, you know, a lot of guys they're toast after this. You know, unless they're I think it's a slam dunk. I think the only thing is now is if somebody wants to make a little gentleman's bet as to whether O'Connell just tucks his tail or whether he actually sees this through, which will make a lot of people who have taken oaths for other types of professions very, very nervous.
Well, I think you're right about that, but there's also a lot of different ways to look at this as well, and it's stuff that came to mind after I read the WFPL story. Philip Bailey always makes me think, or at least he does a lot of the time, but for one thing, what are the three branches of government, Ed?
Well, judicial, executive, and legislative, of course, my
right.
friend.
Okay, judicial, executive, and legislative, right? So the trick to our Constitution is that you have these three different branches of government so that nobody has complete power. For example, you don't have two-thirds of the government. Well, here's the interesting twist for me. You know, one thing, I don't give Ackerson any credit for anything, and I'll tell you why. Because Brent Ackerson is part of the Shanklin Seven, who can't stand Jim King, of course, is the one behind all of this, working with Michael Connell, because and it's kind of a double-edged sword, because Jim King can't stand David James because he can't control David James. Michael Connell can't stand David James because David James endorsed his opponent, Karen Faulkner, who also, by the way, just picked up the JCTA endorsement that Michael Connell has always relied on. He's already losing unions to his opponent. But the reason I bring that up is because as a lawyer, all right, and a Metro Council member, then is that not more of a conflict than a University of Louisville police officer? I mean, let's face facts here. The Metro Council member is what? Legislative, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So these lawyers make laws, and then they go defend people or prosecute people based on the laws they created. So to me, that's more of an ethical concern with their oath than it ever would be at David James with the University of Louisville Police. And the second thing I've really got to point out here, because this has always been a puzzle for me anyway, I never really wanted to pursue it until now. But when we look at our practicing attorneys, for example, okay, we have attorneys who are part-time attorneys, and give Brent Ackerson credit for pointing this out, but we've got attorneys who are part-time prosecutors who work for the city in the morning, all right, and then they work in their own private practice in the afternoon. Now, these guys, to the best of my knowledge, basically work in traffic court. So if you got a DUI guy that goes to traffic court in the morning and you have to prosecute him, and then in the afternoon, do you get to defend him too? There's nothing that says you can't, even though we know it's a clear ethical breach. There's nothing in the law that says you can't. So even if we can't get rid of the lawyers, maybe we need to start tapping down on what they are allowed and are not allowed to do. Forget the JCC. Forget the Kentucky Bar Association. Maybe that's what the Metro Council needs to address, because that brings up a whole hornet's nest of opportunity as well, does it not?
Oh, absolutely, and that's what I was saying. You know, David James stood his ground. Doesn't seem, and granted, if you're in legislative, you could also write laws that they could either protect you as law enforcement or give you more power as law enforcement. So, I mean, there's a possibility of some overlap there. But like you said, not near what the lawyers are. But I've, you know, now that Michael Connell has come up with this stuff, I look at it like, you know, I think he's going to start looking at the potential for this thing to metastasize and grow into other stuff where people start looking at all sorts of conflicts of interest. You know, it's like, oh, you say he had conflict of interest.
Right.
So what to stop, you know, as you just said, it's like, so you're a prosecutor by day and in the, you know, by morning and by the afternoon, you're defending people in the private sector. Is that a conflict? And then, you know, some judges have their own, you know, they're partners at law firms or whatnot. They have, you know, they may have some degree of ownership or something.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not a conflict of interest? You know, so where does it, that's what I think. I think O'Connell is going to try to find a way to drop this real quick, which, in a way, I wish he wouldn't. It's like, push it. Yeah,
I don't think he's going to.
I don't know, he gives it a big push, and it's like, so these other things come to light, and some citizens will go out there, and, you know, people will start realizing this. You know, you called David James out on it, which, you know, there could be a very minor crossover between the legislative and the judicial, or the, you know, the judicial at that point, very minor. But start looking other places, and this crossover is not as subtle. It's, if you're an attorney, you're prosecuting for a few hours, and then you go defending for a few others. I mean, hey, look, that sounds like a pretty good defense attorney to me. You know everybody that's worked in the prosecutor's office.
Well, you know,
back off a little bit.
You know, it really is, and we've talked before on the show. We've talked before on this show about, you know, some of these deals that get made behind the scenes from these vultures that hang outside of the courtroom because they know the judge, so they get these $1,500, $2,000 cash jobs and split money. I get that. But if you're a part-time prosecutor in the morning in traffic court and you're prosecuting a guy for a second DUI, and then you're showing up in afternoon court defending a guy in his second DUI, you know, you've been doing this shit for a few years. You're friends with the judge. You know each other. Everybody hangs with the judges. That's who lawyers hang with. Judges and lawyers run together. So, you know, if you got a friend on the bench, the guy you prosecuted this morning is going to get the book thrown at him. The guy you're defending this afternoon is going to get some kind of preferential or favorable treatment because of your friendship. That's what you're buying. I mean, that's really what you're buying, folks, when you're buying an attorney who hangs out of court or knows these judges. You're buying their friendship. You're not buying any legal representation. You know, so it's interesting to me when we break that down like that. And now we're looking at all these different things, and I find this incredible. And I'm really curious to see where it all leads because I just can't wait. I don't think Michael Connell is going to drop this.
I think he's going to drop it. I think he's going to have enough people look at him and say, Mike, you know, throw us a bone here. We know you got a grudge. You know, you're playing out some grudge with David James, but if you keep pushing this, then, you know, people are going to start looking at other conflicts and other, you know, other oaths that aren't identical and questioning where people's loyalty lies, you know, so, and that's going to be judges and county attorneys, you know, people working for the county. There's going to be a lot of people that have to look at that and say, dude, pull back a little bit because this is starting to get real close, you know, to crossing the line to where people start looking at us. So,
well, it really
I hope
you
he
know.
Pushes through with it. I hope he pushes through with it. I just want to see, you know, I want to see him do it to get beat on one hand, but on the other hand, I'd like to see him open up that can of worms.
Well, I tell you, I don't see Michael Connell giving up because at this point, quite frankly, he has to have something to win because he's got a lot to prove. I mean, when you've got an upstart like Karen Faulkner, who is out there picking up the endorsements that he takes for granted, he's turning this into a personal vendetta against, you know, David James, and him and Jim King are having this vendetta going on against David James. You know, what are you going to do if you've got to face the risk of losing office because he is nothing more than a political toy? If you got to face the risk of losing office because you're losing the union endorsements and all the people that you typically rely on, you know, you have to have a home run. You have to have something, and I think he's going to gamble that he's going to try to win this thing, and he's got the connections. You know, the connections are there, But since Jack Conway put this in the hands of Tom Wine, that Tom Wine is the final decision maker. And I cannot see where Tom Wine, based on the evidence before him, with all these different competing oaths, could rule against David James. So if he doesn't rule against David James, then where does O'Connell go? You know, that's going to be the interesting trick, and that's what I'm waiting to see.
Yeah.
We've got so much more to cover tonight. One of the big stories going on, Walmart. Yes, we've been talking about this forever. Walmart did announce that they will build a store at 18th and Broadway, like we had talked about so often. There was some hang-up because Attica Scott was out there trying to say that she was going to force Walmart to pay these so-called living wages and unionize and all this other garbage. To be honest with you, Walmart spokesman went on record today, said they did not agree to anything. Like, they didn't agree to anything that Attica Scott wanted. So now, of course, the Kentucky Jobs with Justice and these economic prosperity and everybody else, well, we're going to watch Walmart and make sure that they're paying these employees fairly. Well, if Walmart didn't agree to anything, then they can watch all they want to. That's what they do every day. But we're going to find out quickly, though, because if this was a deal made behind the scenes and this Walmart store follows through with the Attica Scott ploy anyway, and we just didn't go public with it, then I'm going to demand that every Walmart employee in Louisville just walk off the job. I really will. But we're going to find out soon enough. But Walmart says they didn't give anything on that. Apparently, Walmart's going to spend $25 million. Of course, they're going to employ a few hundred people. And they're also going to maintain a possibility of some more retail development down the road. What's going to be interesting is Mayor Greg Fisher said that this project for the city is going to consist of about $1.8 million. They're going to buy six parcels of land that are adjacent to the old Philip Morris situation down at 18th Broadway. So they've already spent $1.1 million doing this during the fiscal year 2013, which in the 2014 fiscal year, or the next fiscal year, will start July the 1st, so they're going to spend about $700,000 more. It's interesting, to say the least, because of all the money that we're giving Cordish and everybody else to not produce any jobs, that we're getting by this cheap with Walmart. I thought that was a pretty interesting testament myself. We're willing to go out on a limb and give all this money to people like the Cordish Group and others, hundreds of millions of dollars, and to get a retail center, we were able to buy that for $1.8 million. Why are we not using the rest of our money just as wisely?
I don't know. To be honest, I somewhat wonder why we have to spend anything to get it. I mean, Walmart is one of the most valuable corporations in the world. So why do we have to pay them anything for them to set up a store on a piece of vacant land and make money? I don't get that. But
well,
yeah, it is on the cheap, you know, as these things go. And I think it's we talked way back. I think it's a good deal. And Lord help us if the activists step in and decide what people are going to pay. I think Walmart, as Walmart typically can, is going to make them look foolish. Because, they're going to be standing out there and they'll make them stand out way away from the store with their little signs and stuff. Probably, volunteering or making $8 an hour or something. Picking.
Right.
But, the people, as I said, there's two ends to it. When it comes to Walmart, there is there's the corporate end. Yeah, what are you paying your help? What are you doing this? But that applies and that impacts some 300 people, like you said, thereabouts. That affects their staff, but there's literally probably in excess of 100,000 people that it's going to impact directly by cutting costs and simplifying their lives in the adjacent neighborhoods and stuff. Being able to go to one place and buy everything you need, from getting your car fixed to getting your kids a shot to picking up a bag of apples. It's going to represent, like I say, you got the three, and this is the thing where politicians goof it all the time. You got their Attica Scott is blowing a gasket over 300 people, of which probably just 100 or so are actually going to be the minimum. Other people will be department managers and assistant managers and certified techs for cars and stuff. They're going to make well in excess of minimum wage or 8-10 or whatever. They're going to make well in excess of that. So they're going to blow a gasket for 100 people, when in fact it's going to really simplify and save people money. And you know, really, it should as a consumer end, it expands to 100,000. So literally, it's 1,000 to 1 the benefit as far as people go. It's just flipping out over that 100 people, and that just it just shows the nearsightedness of some politicians. You still there, Ed?
I'm here, man. My apologies. My apologies. That was me.
Okay.
I hit the wrong button. You know, the interesting thing is we're talking about 100 people, 100 people who, for the most part, those are 100 jobs that we don't have right now. You know, that's 100 people who are going to be thankful for that job. So, you know, screw Attica Scott and these other people. I'm not a big Walmart fan, but I have to say in this particular situation, is very much needed in the neighborhood. It's going to have an optometrist. It's going to have a pharmacy right there in the neighborhood. The big question for me is, how long will they be able to last at that location? And I'll tell you why. Over the weekend, I had about 200 teenagers gather at Waterfront Park. A group of those teens broke off and decided that they wanted to go out on a violent spree. So they went out and started beating people up. They beat up a 13-year-old girl, beat up a husband and wife who were standing on the walk bridge with their granddaughters right there watching. He got a bruised ribs and a concussion. All in all, there was about 6 people that were there. It was a black mob violence. People could call me racist all they want to, but these are the same stories we've been covering from around the country for a long time, have now come home to roost to Louisville. Black mobs going out and singling out white individuals to destroy, to beat up and destroy and rob. And this is not a racial incident. This is not a racial incident. Ask anybody. Of course, Police Chief Steve Conrad went out to say that, you know, this was just a random act. This isn't something that is common for Waterfront. I'm sorry, Chief, that's not exactly true. There's a lot of people that get beat up down on the Waterfront. The fact that there are, you know, a group of 200 come together at one time may not be common for Waterfront, but people get beat up there all the time. They just don't get reported. And, you know, we look at this, Ed, we're starting to see that black mob gang mentality right here in Louisville, right in downtown Louisville around 4th Street Live, and the other places down there that we're trying to promote to tourism. So, you know, what does this say?
Well, you know, racial elements aside, I look at it as you've got 200 people loitering. Mm-hmm. And in this era of cell phones and something, I would love to know, once they started on this, this, you know, moving like a pack of animals,
yep,
if anybody called it in, you know, because that sort of blows my mind that 200 people could, you know, in a mob could move like that and get in one place, and somewhere along the way, a cop doesn't make his presence known, one or two or three. Because like you said, this is the place, man. There were no basketball games going on. There were no football games. There were no big events that where half the police force was preoccupied with traffic control and crowd control. This is the Waterfront. It was a nice day, you know, so it's spring and people are coming out. It just amazes me how this got past them. You know, it's like, hey, guess what? There's 200, you know, I've played rugby in the park many times. The cops will slow down, and we may only have 100 people, and most of them are spectators. They'll slow down and kind of check it out. So it amazes me, like you said, down there by 4th Street Live, the Yum Center, the Tumbleweed, the mm-hmm, parks, the green mm-hmm space, the yacht slips and everything. This is like you said, this is a big marketing thing, big tourist thing. Theoretically, there's going to be tourists down there. So you would think at some point that if a crowd of people forms and there's not a band playing or something like that, that somewhere along the way the police would have lit up on this and said, you know what, that could go somewhere.
Oh, you would think so.
You roll the cruiser on in there or the horse or the bike or something and get in there and just make your presence known before somebody gets their ass kicked.
Well, you would think so. And in this case, it started with a 13-year-old girl being robbed by the group. And there was about 10 to 15 male teenagers. They ranged from juveniles to adults. This according to Wave3.com, which I'm kind of partial to. But Wave3 put out the story. There was 200 teens that had gathered at Waterfront Park Saturday night. About 10 to 15 of them, the male teenagers. They first robbed a 13-year-old girl. A man by the name of Jim Henry is the one who stepped in to stop to help her when they were robbing her. And that's when he got beat up by these thugs. He was jumped and beaten. He has a concussion, bruised ribs. And his wife, Jean, actually dialed 911 and called the police. And her two granddaughters were with her. They were both ages 4 and 7. And nobody, you know, the police finally came, showed up. And, you know, according to Chief Conrad, they were chasing reports all the way up till about 9:45. You know, they kept getting calls from different places. These guys were hitting people and leaving. They got a man at 6th and Broadway, beat one mother up so bad. They turned on a mother that was driving her car and then beat her up and tore her car up right in front of her kids. She ended up going to get stitches. I mean... You know, it started basically, it looked like they were taking advantage of women, except for Jim Henry, the guy who jumped in to help the one 13-year-old girl. You know, they've got one arrest in all of this, but it's fascinating because we have talked about this mob violence. We've talked about, you know, it doesn't get reported in Louisville, even though we know it goes on. And where we know this every day, we get reports all the time. Well, here was one that they could not avoid reporting. And, you know, it's very disturbing to think that we have to worry about this kind of stuff. And, you know, to think that the police, I'm like you, to think that they couldn't do anything about this preventive is kind of scary in itself. So we're going to pay attention to this and see if we get anybody else. And the last word I had on a late update, real quick, the late update was – go ahead.
I was going to also say, of course, Christopher 2X and the mayor are thinking, you know, they're – if you listen to what they're saying, they're concerned about these youths going off track and everything.
Yeah.
And I've asked the question, well, that's nice. Anybody bother to check the hospital as victims? You know, it's like, let's screw these little animals. they made their choice, you know.
And that's typical.
As a city, you know, compassionate city. We're a compassionate city, Ed. Remember that. Mayor Fisher tells us that. Well, what's the compassion? I think, you know, I haven't heard anything about the chief or Christopher 2X or anybody like that going to the hospital and making sure these people are okay. No, they're concerned about the youth going down the wrong path.
Oh, and I'm totally with you. You know, Christopher 2X, the only time he ever shows up is in situations like this, so you get his media on FaceTime. You know, I'd still like somebody to tell me if he ever paid child support on all these kids that he has, that he wasn't paying, that he quit White Castle job that he had to go out here and make no money. I'm still curious to find out about how he takes care of his kids or if his ex-wife or the mother of his children is living on welfare while he's out here roaming the streets acting like he's somebody. I still want to know those answers. You know, when it comes to Mayor Greg Fisher, I mean, let's face it, this ain't nothing but Greg Fisher patronizing the black community, and the black community should be insulted by it. The black community should be insulted that this mayor is sitting out there talking to them and belittling them and talking so bad, these poor kids went off track. And I tell you why I believe that. Because when it comes to the West End, when it comes to west of Broadway, 9th of Broadway, you know, that primarily is the West End, is what we call it. It's primarily African American. And what has this mayor or his predecessor, Abramson, or any other Democrat, insert name here, in Louisville ever done to show these kids a different way of life other than violence, drugs, and all that kind of stuff? They've had every opportunity in the world to build up the West End and make part of the West End commercial, give people job opportunities, economic opportunities, and what happens? We get people like Attica Scott whining and crying because Walmart's coming here and not living up to her demands when Walmart's bringing 300 jobs with them that's going to benefit the residents of the neighborhood. So this is the major problem that I've got with this. Here Greg Fisher is, once again, another prominent Democrat out there who lied to get elected to the West End and still hasn't followed through with anything in there, acting like he really cares or is sincere. As far as I'm concerned, Greg Fisher and his sister, Lynn Fisher, are two of the biggest racists in Louisville. And I think Kevin Cosby is nothing more than a white man, Uncle Tom. I'll say it right here. The white guy said it. There you go. But that's what my problem is. I don't want to hear anybody tell me about these poor kids. We wonder how they got off a track. I want somebody to tell me we're going to create a different atmosphere to give these kids something to look forward to and give them some hope. Am I wrong in that?
No, no. And you know, we said that all along, whether it's small business or charter schools or whatever, or building a vocational education center down there so they can do
right.
jobs. You know, earn a higher pay scale or up to and including opening a Walmart. You know, that's 300 jobs. Mm-hmm. Some of them aren't going to pay great. Some of them pay pretty well. But it's 300 jobs. You know, if every one of these hoodlums and then some needed a job and that was their problem, hey, guess what, Etika? That's enough jobs to keep them busy.
I agree.
Not beating the crap out of people. You know,
I agree.
So I just I think it's a shame. And my biggest thing is, you know, we have a police force. It is a marquee part of the city. Like, to my knowledge, no other huge events were going on that required a whole lot of police presence. It's waking up from a long, cold winter. People are obviously taking advantage of it. The bridge crossing, the crosswalk bridge is in the headlines. It's all very high profile. Yet a marauding, you know, basically a small riot forms down there. And, you know, the police are just kind of, I guess they're doing Keystone Cops, kind of, you know, arriving a day late and a dollar short on every next beatdown.
I agree. It's gotten totally out of hand. And we're going to start seeing more of this. Now that it's out there, now that the news reported this first one, you're going to start seeing more and more of this going on. And it should be very disturbing to anybody in the West End, to anybody in the African-American community, that this mayor is patronizing and trying to act like he cares. And quite honestly, I feel the same about Christopher 2X, who, for, as far as I'm concerned, it isn't any good in the neighborhood either. I really don't care, and I'm sick of sitting here and sugarcoating it to try to make people happy because it just doesn't get the job done. We are going to take a quick break. We will be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springson Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investor.
Guys, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. If you guys are listening to you, thanks as always. Hit that number on the dial pad and we'll bring you on air. We got a little bit of time left here, Ed. I tell you, we got a couple other stories we want to get into. One of the big ones, that I thought actually was the right thing, believe it or not, but I usually disagree with these guys anymore. But Thursday, the Louisville Metro Ethics Commission decided to bounce Jim King's request back to the Metro Council. Jim King, as we all know, is at the center of the charges brought against him by Janice Rucker, an activist here in Louisville, and, of course, charges I brought against him in October, about zoning regulations and him benefiting from them through King Southern Bank every time he votes on them. Well, he had asked the Louisville Metro Ethics Commission to determine whether he was allowed to vote on things that his bank was involved with or not, essentially. And Chairman Jonathan Ricketts of the Ethics Commission wrote in a letter that was approved by the entire commission to send back on that request that says the commission is empowered to interpret the ordinance as it applies to a specific set of facts, but setting policy is beyond the scope of the authority bestowed upon the commission by the council and mayor. So in short, what he said was, you guys in the Metro Council make the rules. All we do is interpret them. We follow the rules that you set and make a decision on whether you did them right or wrong. We're not going to make the rules for you. Now, of course, I think that Jim King and everybody else knew in advance that this was the way it was going to be, but they just went through this whole show. But Jonathan Ricketts got it right, did he not?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we, as conservatives or Democrats, when it doesn't go your way, you decry legislating from the bench. So, yeah, we don't want people to legislate from the bench. Okay, send it back. You know, and sometimes I do also believe it, that the legislative end of it, as far as self-policing, they're looking for a way out. So it's like, no, they're saying, you know, get more specific with your laws, get more specific with your complaints, you know, and we will interpret it. But right now, you know, you don't get to just dump it on us and hope that we're going to sit there and say, oh yeah, it's cool. You know, they're saying, let's, you know, let's give it another look. Let's bring some clarity and some specifics to it, and we'll look at it again. I think that's what they need to do.
Well, I think they're absolutely correct. Councilwoman Tina Ward-Pugh, she's in her final year on the council. She's also the chair of the Government Accountability and Ethics Committee of the council, and she said they're going to start looking at this immediately. She wasn't surprised by the commission's decision, and they had already decided to make that a priority for her committee this year. What I'm really hoping is that Tina Ward-Pugh can put something together and get it out of committee and vote it on in the council before the end of the year when her term expires, because I'm really curious to see what she does with this. But it was really interesting because, you know, everybody thinks Jim King is getting preferential treatment, including me. And, you know, so when we put that into play, I think the Metro Council has to step up to the plate. And if nothing else, this will give us more accountability against our elected officials on the Metro Council, right?
Yeah. I mean, we elect them to write the laws. They need to write the laws, and they need to be specific as far as how the laws apply to themselves, too. So, you know, let's see what they've got. I mean, if they – and that's another thing. If they go through and they self-regulate with a bunch of gray area in any legislation or anything like that, then we'll know what they're about.
Yep, I agree with you 100%. And in other news, this one I thought was really, really funny, Ed. I got to be honest with you. And I've got to give a hat tip to Jake over at Page One for this one, because I wouldn't have done it. I normally don't like to give credit to him for anything because he doesn't give me credit. But it's interesting. Page One Kentucky has a story out Friday, I believe it was, talking about Allison Lundgren Grimes and her misinformation campaign against Mitch McConnell. Yep, you heard me right. Jake is actually defending McConnell. But what he's defending McConnell on is so obvious that Allison Lundgren Grimes, or Allison Wonderland Grimes, as we call her, is so desperate. It's hilarious. Allison Lundgren Grimes' people apparently are working with other Democrat activists to put out talking points that are trying to basically say that Mitch McConnell was pro-choice or soft on abortion when he was a Jefferson County government back in the late 70s. Now, for one thing, who cares about the late 70s today? But anyone who would sit here and suggest that Mitch McConnell was pro-choice at any point in his career has got to be a lunatic. It's not based in reality. That's what Jake says, and I agree with him. Even the Democrats have their own research file that actually contradicts everything that Allison Lundgren Grimes is out there saying now. What do you think about this? Is that desperation, or is that just more stupidity because she's too dumb to be elected?
I think it's too early for desperation. I think it's just stupidity. I think, in a way, I almost think they're trying to outsmart themselves, that they know Bevin will hit McConnell with some, or at least some of McConnell's, backers. I don't even know that super PAC's name right off. They'll hit with some pretty thinly stretched stories, like, gay marriages, that thing they had on the radio. So maybe they're putting it out there hoping somebody picks it up without doing due diligence or something, or just takes it on hearsay. And maybe they're hoping that one of these super PACs picks it up. Maybe not.
Well,
I don't know. But it seems more stupidity to me because, anytime you're reaching back 40 years, that's even if it were 100% true, it's 40 years ago.
Right.
So please.
Oh, I know. And that's the thing. I mean, McConnell was in Jefferson County government in the late 70s. I remember McConnell from then. He also went to college with my aunt, who's now deceased. But it's fascinating because McConnell was more anti-abortion in Jefferson County than he was the whole state of Kentucky at that time. So, as a matter of fact, Jake even points out the obvious, that McConnell actually pushed ordinances through that were so restrictive that the ordinances were actually struck down later in court. McConnell is an attorney. Nobody remembers that most of the time. So, he pushed through these ordinances that were later struck down in court. And I can't believe that Allison Lunding and Grimes, if she's sitting out here talking about how these polls, these early polls, are showing her in a dead heat or beating Mitch McConnell, why do you put out something like this that just reeks of desperation?
I don't know, but it's the McConnell machine, as we know, it can bite back pretty hard. We've all seen it.
Right.
I see. Once again, I think one of the things when you're up against an opponent like this in a big money race like this, you don't write your opponent's commercials for them. At least make them do that. And I can see the commercial right now. How desperate is Allison Lindgren Grimes? Well, she accused Mitch McConnell of being pro-abortion 40
right.
years ago, and then proving her wrong.
Right.
And it's like, is this the senator you want representing you? Come on, Allison. Don't write the man's commercials for him.
Oh, I'm telling you. I mean, those would be easy to run. I just thought that was so interesting. I just could not believe it. And I guess I want to hit one quick national story before we get out of here into closing arguments. But Huffington Post was reporting yesterday on Jimmy Carter. Former President Jimmy Carter believes that the NSA, the National Security Agency, is probably monitoring his email. Jimmy Carter was in an interview with NBC's Andrea Mitchell that aired yesterday on Meet the Press, and specifically said he favors snail mail when communicating with foreign officials. Carter told Mitchell that the justification for surveillance has been extremely liberalized and abused by our own intelligence agencies. I have felt that my own communications are probably monitored, so when I want to communicate with a foreign leader privately, I either type or write the letter myself, put it in a post office with a stamp, and mail it old-fashioned snail mail way. What do you think about that?
I think Jimmy Carter has the luxury of doing that because it takes a letter a week or two to get there. He's Jimmy Carter. It's not a matter of national security. So, good for Jimmy. He's got that. But beyond that, this is a real duh moment because it's like, Jimmy, dude, they pretty much have said they're collecting all emails. And come on, we were boosting the phone calls. We were boosting the cell phone calls from standing leaders of countries, friendly countries, powerhouse countries like Germany and France. No reality check there, but, it kind of sucks to have to say it, but, you're an ex-president, but standing presidents and standing chancellors have not been immune from the NSA. On what planet did you think they were not going to bug you to, that they were going to boost your email messages? Come on.
Well, I agree with you. I just thought it was interesting because, you know, even Andrea Mitchell asked him, you send your stuff old-fashioned snail mail. And he goes, yeah, I believe if I send an email, it will be monitored. So here he is, former President Jimmy Carter, is concerned about his own mail being monitored by the NSA. I just thought that was very interesting, especially since he's a Democrat and a member of the Insider Club with Barack Obama, right?
Not only that, but come on, he's a Democrat. I mean, doesn't he abide by what they say? Hey, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear, right?
Well, who said that? Who said that during a campaign? I can't remember. I can't remember his name. Seems like he's a president that was running for office.
Yeah, nothing to hide. If you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to fear. So, Jimmy,
Barack Obama.
Yeah. You're trying to have the humanity houses, and you're trying to ensure elections go off without a hitch. I mean, what do you care for reading your emails for?
There you go. Thank you, Barack Obama. And Carter's already been on record anyway. He said when he was at an event in Atlanta last summer, he said, America does not at the moment have a functioning democracy, and went on to say that our democracy has been compromised by the spying, and I totally agree with him there. But he also had some comments about Edward Snowden. He went on to say that Snowden has obviously violated the laws of America, for which he's responsible, but the invasion of human rights and American privacy has gone too far. The secrecy that has been surrounding this invasion of privacy has been excessive, so I think that bringing it to the public notice has probably been at a long-term beneficial, and that's what he had to say on CNN back in June. So, Carter has always been a proponent of getting rid of this unnecessary spying and things like that, so I just thought that was pretty incredible that he's still getting played for that. He's still out there doing it. He was on Meet the Press this weekend, and, I commend him for it. I tell you what, Ed, I also have to say we're out of time, man. This hour flew by. I guess we're going into final thoughts, sir. What do you got?
Well, the final thoughts, like I say, I don't mean to rag on the police. I want to be clear about that. But somewhere amongst the city administration and the police administration, they've seriously dropped the ball on the waterfront. I know they're trying to play it down, but now stuff's starting to come out where they're, in order to keep the crime reports down on that, they're saying it happened on North First Street or East Broadway or something like that. They're moving. It's starting to come out. Guys, if you're going to invest the money and you're going to invite the focus, you're going to have to put a police presence there, obviously. And the most disturbing thing that I've read about the whole thing, it once again, and like I say, you talk about transparency in government, we need it in law enforcement too, is they're saying a lot of these kids probably migrated from Shawnee Park where they had, or other parks where they were having problems, cops' presence went in, and they migrated. So it's not like this just happened. We need to face it. Yeah, it's a big, glorious park. You probably don't want police all over the place. People get the impression something might be amiss. It's like, wow, look at all the police. There might be, have they had crime through here? But you know what? That's the reality. It's time to suck it up, deal with the problem, and move forward. And, I think this goes all the way back to everything from charter schools to jobs. And we need to address it on every level because we've got six people in a hospital in a city that's trying to make nice on behalf of the thugs.
Well, and I agree with you on that. I actually had an entirely different closing plan, but I kind of want to stay with this for a moment because I tell you, when you talk about the police and everything else, I understand these guys are up against a mountain. I really, really do. And up until July of 2012, I was probably one of the biggest police advocates in Louisville. I've argued with Dale the Truth on air. I've argued with anybody else on there. I've written about the police and how they're not understood correctly. But in July of 2012, I was arrested for nothing more than asking an officer his name because he was jacking up my son. And I was arrested for that. I got to spend the night in jail. It destroyed my background check. It kept me from seeking employment in the private sector. And they kept that alive for about 16 months. It didn't finally get reconciled until November of 2013. When I look at my personal experience and I look at other stories around this city that I continue to get daily with similar experiences, then I have to ask myself, what in the hell is going on? Now, in July of 2012, Chief Conrad had only been here a couple of months. He inherited the biggest mess anybody could possibly imagine from his predecessor, former Chief Robert White, who was nothing more than a daggone junkie, in my opinion. He'd like to spend his time over at Blackstone Bowl, either high or drunk, rather than do his job. And his force reflected that. Chief Conrad inherited that. But we have to start asking ourselves a question. What has really changed? Right now, I'm not seeing a bunch of changes. You mentioned the stats that we start moving stuff. If it happened at 18th and Broadway, they're going to tell you it happened at 1st and Broadway. That's crime stat manipulation. Chief Robert White started that program. Now, I don't know to what degree that is still going on, but I know in my particular case, these cops lied, got caught, I won, and got paid. Wasn't much, but I won and got paid. And that's the flip side of that. What is it costing not only to the community when it comes to crimes and violence, what is it costing the community in terms of money and taxes and things like that? We need to get the transparency in the police department. You will not see Chief Conrad sit down with me and talk with me. Quite frankly, I'm sure it's because of the charges I brought against the department, so I'm not allowed to talk to him. And that's okay. I get that. But it's time we started paying attention to what's going on in our police department and trying to find out how they miss these obvious signs when you've got 200 out-of-control teenagers sitting at Waterfront Park and 10 to 15 of them break off and start attacking women, including 13-year-old girls. It's disturbing. It's the same thing that's happening around the country, and it's time we in Louisville took control of our streets and our community and stopped this. Quit letting this mayor try to patronize and talk down to the African-American community in this town. And let's start holding thugs accountable regardless of race. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, same time, same channel, 7 o'clock. Mr. Martin, you will be here?
Yeah, I plan on it.
There we go. All right, me and Ev will be back tomorrow night. Right. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We'll talk to you then. Take care.